Chamber. So today I just felt rather inspired that we should take up something on Odysseus. Of course, the immediate occasion is that the movie has come on his journey, and it is in many ways a landmark story by Homer. Not only Homer has spoken about it, many of the poets in the medieval ages have spoken about this journey, including another great Roman poet, Virgil. And Virgil doesn't, the name changes, it changes into Ulysses, not Odysseus. It's about the same character. The whole story is same. And Homer is among the foremost, not just Greek poets, but the world poets. Shivabindu ranks him at par with Valmiki and Shakespeare. So we can imagine what caliber of the poet. And he is a seer. He is not just writing a story. He is writing something which has happened, which he has seen, but of which it's difficult to find historical evidence. Just like Ramayana, and many people would regard it as myth. And no doubt when we read the story, there are elements of myths and history, or rather, by myths I don't mean something which is not true, but things of a symbolic nature, occult nature, interspersed, very well blended with the main story, making it a marvel. It's a classic of all times. I'm not speaking of the movie. I'm sure movies can be made always better, though this is a well-made movie. But that finishes the movie part, because I don't want to discuss the film, but it's a very well-made film, no doubt. So what really is the story and what is its importance? Shobindu speaks about it, and he has even translated the first part of Homer's Odyssey. And he has written one of his long poems, which he ranked next to Savitri, which remained incomplete. About 100 pages worth of solid, beautiful poetry. And that's based on this theme of the war which took place, the Trojan War. And he has immortalized the Trojan War in one of the four great events. And he says that historians say that none of them happened. But these are the four events which have been of greatest importance to the history of mankind. And one of them which he mentions is the Siege of Troy. And he says the Siege of Troy created Hellas. So that would be a starting point to understand what was happening. So before, this story is about travel of Odysseus, but there is a war which takes place before Odysseus starts back on his journey. So war is going backward. It all starts with the birth of Helen. So Helen is the daughter of Zeus and Leda, which in our context would be Indra and Sachi. Many characters are the same. Very lot of similarities. So she has been brought because the Bronze Age is going to end. And her mission is to destroy, to make sure that the Bronze Age is finished, raised to the ground, so that a new age can start. By raised to the ground means the highest and the best is raised to the ground. Shobindu speaks of this in one of his essays, that normally we have a term called Kali Varjanam. So we believe that only bad things are destroyed. But actually, even what is good is destroyed. And it's destroyed so that it completely new beginning can be, start. Now, this we'll talk about a little later, because very often people cry about Kali Yuga and they say this has happened, that has happened. But this is the reason why it happens. Because the coming ages have to be built completely anew. So we see, for instance, in the Bronze Age, there is the age of the gods all around, we'll see. All the gods. So Greeks, we'll see in Mahabharata also. All kinds of gods are there. Egyptian gods are there. Dating is very difficult to say. People date that the Trojan War took place around 1300, 1200 BC. So about 3000 years, more or less, a little over 3000 years, 3500 years maybe from today. And Mahabharata War, some people date it at 4000 to 4500, but there are also accounts that possibly 3500 years. So it's quite likely it was a time when heroic age, or the Bronze Age, or as we call it, Dwapar, was ending. And all over, the war was destroying many things which were high, because either they were being misused or they were had become decadent, and all those systems had to be destroyed for a completely new beginning. Also, more importantly, the gods were withdrawing. This is nowhere, people don't talk about it. If you really look at the beginning of Homer's epic and Shurbindo's Ilion, he has written Ilion on this before the war. So in the epic, you'll see that all the gods have a meeting, and Zeus is one of them, and he asks the gods to withdraw. Actually, it is the beginning of Kali Age. So they say, because they all have their favorites, there are people who have dedicated temples to them. But he says, no, you have to withdraw. And there is a bit of unhappiness among the gods. And then when all the gods have accepted, they have no choice. Of course, they still have their favorites. They try to be with them. For instance, the Greek hero Odysseus, Athene is his favorite, which in our context will be Maheshwari, or you can even speak of Durga. So she is the one who doesn't abandon him. All the gods start withdrawing one by one, because a new age, and that when all the gods decide that they are going to withdraw from their worshippers, that is the time when at the end there is only Zeus and Ananke who are left. Ananke is the goddess of fate, and fate in Ananke is like a fate which may sound like very strange. It doesn't come with any calculation. So at the end, Ananke is always wearing the mask she's shown, and he lifts the mask, and that's when the fate is sealed. And Shobindo describes Ilion with the birth of dawn, or book of dawn, where in the dawn, Zeus is looking over the city where all the children are going to school, everybody is going about their own business. And they do not know that today is the day when not only an age is going to change, there is going to be a rampant destruction. They do not know. That's how Shobindo brings it. So who is this dawn? Now, actually, Helen is the dawn. She is described as, if we read Shobindo's Secret of the Vedas, Helen comes also from the word Helios. This is not written anywhere, but it's just pure my understanding. Helios is sun, and she is daughter of the sun, Helen. And she has come to usher a new dawn, but for that the past must be destroyed. And she is born with this mission, just like we see Draupadi, born with the mission to completely change over the whole thing. So Helen is born, and her beauty, being the dawn goddess herself, her beauty is unparalleled. In the actual story, myth, she is described as the daughter of, not, I'm not talking about the movie now, because otherwise, so she is the daughter of Zeus and Leda, and she is, comes out of the egg, and she is, that's how, like mythology, will not go into every detail because that will take a long time. And then when she emerges, she grows up, comes of age, and then there is a contest who will be the person whom she will get married. This is the background of the story. So there is a contest, and Helen is the one. See, those days it was Swayamvar. Exactly the same thing is happening there. So in the Swayamvar, there are two suitors. Helen loves this man, Menelaus. Menelaus, if just to little bit aside in today's context, Menelaus is Nalnida, our own Nalnida. This is what I have read. Okay, don't ask me for authority. So she chooses, they have decided, and Odysseus is also one of the contestants. So Odysseus knows that Helen actually loves him, wants to get married to him. So he calls her brother. She has two brothers. And Shobindo speaks of these brothers, just as she is the dawn goddess, these two brothers are twins. And Castor and Polinus. And they are just, if you read the descriptions, they are Ashwin Kumars. They are twins who help the sky get clear, who help the, you know, think smart. They are bestowed themselves with mythological powers. So it's very interesting that they are the Ashwins, and we have Helen, the dawn goddess. And she has to choose someone. So Odysseus, he knows that the moment she chooses one person, all the other suitors will may attack. So what he does is, but he has his own agenda, but that's a little later. So he calls her brother and says, see, I will help you, I'll give you some advice, and of course I understand the whole thing, but I want something from you. So what do you want? He says, I want to marry Helen's cousin sister. Who is Helen's cousin sister? Penelope. He says, I want to marry her. And rest, I will tell you, they are going to fight. He is a very wise person. He is Maheshwari's favorite. So all through you will see Odysseus is Maheshwari's favorite. Always his counsel, farsightedness. So he says, okay, what do you want? He says, I want to marry Penelope. So he says, done. Penelope, they ask, and Penelope agrees. So then he says, okay, now you take a promise from all these suitors that whoever Helen gets married to, since all of them love Helen, want Helen, they will be duty bound to protect her if she is ever abducted or in danger. This is the background. That is the promise which brought them together. So all of them agree. They say, and that was an age, bronze age, so they would still keep the word of honor. Today they will say one thing and tomorrow by evening say something else. So they all agree that, okay, if anything happens untoward to Helen, we all will be duty bound to protect her forever. Just imagine what a kind of promise they all give, all of them. So it's a very inspiring story. So then says, okay, fine. So now she makes the choice and they have a kind of a bow contest, just like in ancient times. Bow was always used like a contest because it was the primary weapon. And then finally, anyway, she decides to marry Menelaus. And when they marry, then all the kings are now bound, by duty bound. So they all go back to their homes. They can't fight. In fact, they have taken vow that they will protect if anything happens to Helen. So this is the background of the story. And then they go back happily until there comes Paris. Paris is very interesting. He is a hero in many ways. Now, Paris, when he is born, there is a prophecy. The prophecy is that he will bring the downfall of Troy. And it has been said, okay, I don't ask me for any confirmatory proof. It has been said that Shurubindu himself is Paris. He comes at the end of the age. Just like Shri Krishna makes sure that the whole civilization is raised to the ground. So Paris comes. So Paris, now there are different accounts, but we'll stick to Homer's account because this epic has been told, retold. So let's not go into, you know, some would say abducted. No. As per Homer's account, Paris comes there during his wandering. When it is prophesied, then actually his father, King Priam, abandons him. He says, make sure he is brought up somewhere else. So he goes away. But then as destiny would have it, he is saved. He grows up with the shepherds. So we'll cut that story short. And when Paris grows up, comes of age, then he has the itch to travel. And while traveling, he goes to Menelaus' home. And there everybody has heard the beauty of Helen. It is said, and I think the movie also carried this dialogue, that the face that launched 1,000 ships into war. She is regarded till date as the most beautiful woman. Whatever that means. I mean, you can't just... She is dawn goddess who has taken a human form. So, well, Paris goes there and they fall in love. As per Homer, there are different accounts. Well, so then one day when Menelaus and a brother Agamemnon, who is the king, they are away hunting, that is the time Paris and Helen flee on the ship. Now when they come back, the house is empty. And then they wonder what to do. Of course they know that this person has done the mischief. And they are gathering all the people that, you know, we have to attack. Now everybody is duty bound. Achilles first tries to say, no, it's okay. He tries to say that I am got mad, crazy, because he's a war machine. Actually, Homer's both the epics, Iliad and the Odyssey, Iliad is centered around Achilles. He is the hero. And Odyssey is around Odysseus. These are the two main heroes. So Achilles says, no, because Achilles is also a mysterious birth. When he is born, his mother is like Ganga, same, Bhishma. So like that, he is impregnable except in his heel. That's why we have heard the phrase Achilles' heel. Because mother gives him a dip into the river. And as she dips into the river, she has to hold him. So she holds in the heel. So all the part which goes into the river becomes like a vajra. You cannot he won't be injured there, except the Achilles. That's why we have the phrase Achilles heel, the weak spot. And who will hit on the heel? Nobody generally. So Achilles is like an invincible armor. But he tries to play, no. Even Odysseus tries to, they all tried to shirk, because Odysseus has a lovely wife and he has got a child who is just about 2 or 3. And so he also says, no, see, I have to look after. But eventually they are both taken up by the promise. And because of that promise which they have made when Helen is getting married, eventually they come. Many other warriors come, but that's not so interesting. So I'll just read first a few lines. I just feel tempted to. Okay. So one is a portion which Shobindu wrote. It's an image, a poetry he has written, half, just a few lines. It's an image that comes to him. As we know, he was in the Trojan War, and several places that reference is there. So what is the image that has come to him? He describes this, not translation of Homer's Iliad. He has even done a bit of translation apart from writing Ilion. Rushing from Troy like a cloud on the plains, the Trojans thundered just as a storm comes, thundering thick with the dust of kingdoms. So now he's describing that war scene. This image has come. Est with the devious dance of the lightning, so all Troas, loud with the roar of the chariots, loud with the vaunt and the war cry, rushed from Troywards, gleaming with spears and rolled on enormous, joyous as ever. Now comes, it's his own character in that day. We just feel Paris is just a romantic person. No, look at it. Joyous as ever, Paris led them, glancing in armor, brilliant with gold, like a bridegroom, playing with death and the battle. Even as a part in his chamber, he played with his beautiful Helen. What a combination of two, Shringar and Veeras. How Shobindu blends. Touching her body, rejoiced with a low and lyrical laughter. So he laughed as he smote his foemen. Round him the arrows, round him the spears of the Argives sang like the voices of maidens. So I have not read this kind of a description of war anywhere. Trilling the anthem of bridal bliss is in a war. Anthem is of bridal bliss. The chant hymeneal. Hymeneal is that, the marriage whole thing, first day. Round him the warriors fell like flowers, strewn at a bridal, red with the beauty of blood. This is a description which is just amazing. One wishes that he had completed. Ilion was one of the poems, Shobindu, after Savitri, if there is any work he himself favored most, was Ilion, which he wanted to complete, which he obviously couldn't complete. And then he translates the first part of Homer's Odyssey. He translates. See, in those days, so we'll see here, there are bards. How did they come to know? There was no TV. That's why, who is the witness of what has happened? So bards used to travel. Like we also had now wandering ascetics. So bards were the singers, court singers, but not fixed to a court. They will travel and bring tales in very poetic form. Like we have Lav Kush narrating Sri Rama's exploits as a child when he comes, We have, it's immortalized in some of the stories. So these bards were traveling all over the world, in that little world. So they would carry tales. So the bards come and sing. That's how it starts. But here, Homer is praying to Mother Saraswati, Muse. He doesn't use the word Mother Saraswati. He says, you inspire me. I cannot write. I feel inspired to write. But I don't know whether I can inspire or not. I am inspired enough or not. So you have to inspire me. So Homer writes, now this from the original first paragraph which he has translated. Sing to me, Muse, of the man many counseled, who far through the world's ways wandering was tossed after Troy he sacked. This is Odysseus. Because as we know, the story of Odysseus starts after Troy has fallen. So then Odysseus, all other, the king, Agamemnon, Helen, Menelaus, all the other warriors are going on one route. But Odysseus, because he is a chosen one of Maheshwari. And see, very interesting. There is a saying that those whom God chooses, they have to face through many more challenges than the ordinary persons. And mother says it's very true. Odysseus is a favorite of Athena, Maheshwari. She is guiding him, counseling him, and he chooses a route which proves to be, in the end, nobody survives except Odysseus. So, well, it was the prophecy he had to fulfill, but that's, we'll come to that a little later, why, what happens. They didn't listen to his counsel actually, because they all died eventually, not so much through the challenges. Odysseus saves them. But there is a land where they go, where there is the cattle of the sun. So cattle of the sun is basically, right from the Vedas, you will see, you will read, herds of the sun go. So similarly, in the Greek myth, we have cattle of the sun. So they have a special blessing of Apollo, the sun god. So it's a very mystic story. So they land up at a place where they have to obey the law of the sun. That's what it means. And the law of the sun is in its own, it's not about killing a calf, but well, the deeper sense is that if you come, and like if you come to a place which is spiritually charged, you have to obey a higher law. The human laws pale, they become insignificant. But there is another law which begins to apply, because that law will take you to freedom. So they go to that land where the cattle of the sun are gazing. They have been stolen, just like the story of Panis and Vritra, absolutely same. So I'm just putting it in a nutshell. They were stolen and hid there, but sun knows where they are hidden. So he has blessed that land and said, anybody who tries to kill them, steal them, he will meet with disaster. So these cattle are gazing, and Odysseus is told about it. And he tells all his shipmates, don't do this, land is wonderful, eat, but don't kill any of the cattle there. They don't listen, and they kill. After that, there is fury of the sun. And he was keeping Rudra under check, Poseidon. He has kept Poseidon under check, because sun is the ultimate, no? So God. So now when these people violate the law, he withdraws that support, that's enough for the sun. And now the Rudra forces completely destroy the ship. And the ship wrecks, everybody dies except Odysseus, who is then taken care of by a nymph. So for 7 years he stays with the nymph. He forgets everything, he's badly injured. And he's given the lotus flower seeds. Which lotus? Well, blue lotus flower is the only one whose seeds actually help in pain. Not the red lotus. I don't know what they showed. I think they showed the blue lotus. So blue lotus seeds have been used in Ayurveda. Not only Ayurveda, in ancient literature. They numb the pain. So he is badly injured, shipwreck. Everybody has died. And so he eats those lotus flowers, and he loves those seeds. Then he forgets not only the pain, he forgets where he... And these are shipwrecks, so he completely loses his memory. So he believes he belongs to now this place. She is a water nymph. She takes him, and she is fond. He is a hero after all, and they are together for 7 years. And he is happily settled. So he doesn't know any other world. But Athena is behind him. She knows this man is not meant for this. Now remember what happens to Arjun when he goes to Urvashi's kingdom. Now he remembers. He could have lived there for many years. Maybe for all life. So, but he has a mission. So Odysseus forgets. He's happy. And then after... But Athena keeps prompting him. One thing or the other. Fills his thoughts with some memories, some ideas. So he is ever unhappy. He is very happy outwardly, because this water nymph is looking after all his needs. But he is somewhere unhappy. And eventually she decides to release him. So that's when she says, now I am releasing you. But to find your way back won't be easy. Why? Because after all the krit that has happened, though so much killings have happened, so many people, you have to first make sure that you pay to the pitras, like the pretatmas, those who have been died during the war. So their ghosts, you are in one way responsible. You have not done directly, but you are the person because of whom actually they won the war. Everybody knows that. So he is the one who had spoken about the devising a horse, and every time when you read the original, you'll see it is Odysseus' counsel which helps them win the war. He says, you are the mastermind. So he says, okay. So he goes to the land of Hades. Hades is like our Pitralok or Patallok or whatever we want to call it. Pitralok basically, it's some kind of vital world where it's all by mist, and he offers his sacrifice. So it's very interesting. Ancient civilizations used to offer sacrifice of living animals. Even if you go far back, a living human being. So what was it, this sacrifice? Now, of course, we have forgotten its occult meaning, and it should not be done because we have gone beyond the age of the gods. But blood is the symbol of vitality. The entire vital energy runs through two currents, the nervous system and the blood. So that blood contains the vital energy of the animal which attracts these forces. That's the occult sense behind it. Again, that age is over. We should not go back to that age. But this is how it was practiced. So that blood is sacrificed. And then all of them come. All the pitras come. Who all come? He's surprised to see Agamemnon. He's the king who has already gone back. But he's killed by Helen. And then he also dies, and he is also there. And then one of the boys who comes, and quite a few, he meets Achilles, he meets others, and all of them tell them their account of what happened and how. So that's how the narrative runs. We'll not go into all the details. But finally, there is a blind priest called Tiresias, and he tells him the way. That from here, now you have settled all the score by offering, making the offering, by offering prayers. We'll set you free. Now you have to take your call. So Athena is waiting. He ends up on his, ship, and they are all are going. But these fellows, all his other men, eventually die when they land up from there in the land of this water nymph. They go to the sun grid, the children of the sun, or the cows or cattle, and then they crash, and eventually he's the sole survivor. So now she tells him, you carry on. So he lies and drifting. It's an amazing journey. This reminded me of lines from Savitri. When we can do nothing but drift and bail, a mighty guidance leads us still through all. This is summarizes that line. That even through the bitterness of death and fall, even through our sins, our sorrows and our tears, when nothing we can do but drift and bail, a mighty guidance leads us still through all. So he sleeps, and he is carried by Athena and the waves, and ultimately as he appeased, so Poseidon also quiet, and he lands up in Ithaca. Not Ithaca, he first lands up in the place where his son is there. Now we need not talk about that part of the story. So, we come back to these lines. Okay. So, Paris is leading them in that battle. And, okay. Now we'll talk about the first passage. Shurbindo translates. Now this is a translation from Homer's epic, the Odysseus. Shurbindo has translated it. I have not just watched the film, I have read both the books, just to say what are my qualifications. And I have loved them. Honestly, among my top list. Sing to me, muse, of the many, many counseled, who far through the world's ways, wandering, was tossed after Troia he sagged. This is hexameter, and again, we'll not go into it. So even Ilion is written in hexameter. as if, you know, completely, if Homer were to write, Troya he sacked, the divine stronghold. Many cities of men he beheld. So his whole journey is being summarized in the first passage itself, that he beheld many cities, as we know, the Cyclopes and the two Charybdis and Cybele, all those he goes through. Whirlpool is on one side. There's another interesting story, maybe we'll talk about it a little bit, that he has to navigate through many dangers, many cities. So one of them is the Cyclopes, one-eyed giants. And these giants are, again, they are favorites of Poseidon. Poseidon is our Rudra, who is raising all the waters, storms, and, you know, it's like, to understand it, and the story itself, this is the first adventure. So in your inner journey, first you have to quieten these beings. In Tantra, you have first Pashupati. And at the end, there is Gopal, who is the lover of the, you know, so here also, first adventure is, this Cyclopes. And at the end, he reaches the sun god's land, after which, you know, he has to, after getting a thrashing, then the water nymph, and then he finds the way. So, same way we see, it's an inner journey. So, first he has to deal with the Cyclopes, who are one-eyed giant. And as we know the story, Odysseus is a witty person. So Cyclope, in the movie they don't really show it very well, this part. But who are the Cyclope? They are, again, as I said, these are very primitive kind of beings. By one eyed is not necessarily showing one eye on the top, which is okay. But symbol is they cannot have a completer vision. They are very narrow in their thought, understanding of life. So for him, kill, eat, rest. So what does Odysseus do? He sees, he comes. They are thinking it's a nice place. They enter a cave. They have light up the fire. They are waiting for the owner to come, that we have cooked a meal for you. And comes Cyclops. He understands there are human beings. He closes the entrance. And he immediately munches two of the men as a meal. Good dinner. Snack. I say, what is this? Morning he gets up, munches two more. And then he goes. Now they are wondering what to do. So they come upon a strategy. And the strategy is enacted when he comes next evening. Odysseus tells him, won't you like to know who I am? Who are you? I'm talking of the original epic. So he will say, my name is Nobody. He says, I like you because you have kept some wine ready for me. He has kept wine ready for him. I like you, I'll eat you last. He says, okay. So he keeps the wine, and it's pure wine. He gives all the wine, and the fellow is drunk completely. That's when they pierce the eye. And the next day morning, he gets up, he's screaming in pain, and the door is open, and he is, that's when they make an escape. Actually, according to the story, lying on the underbelly of the sheep. They walk below the sheep. They have not shown really anything. So he tries to touch their tops because he's now grown blind. But he cannot find. So he prays to Poseidon. He is very angry. Poseidon also gets angry. How dare you touch my fellow? He survives. They don't kill him because they are very conscientious people. They hear him praying to Poseidon. So they say, we should not kill him. And they just make escape. He tries to come out, does all kinds of tricks, but finally they escape. Then they go through two rocks, which are, those rocks have we have heard the phrase devil and the deep sea. So, on one side is the whirlpool. If their ship lands up there, means everybody dies. The other is the two rocks. If they go between the rock, they are very narrow rocks, and that is where the devil and the deep sea. Heard of the phrase? That's all what. So, there is a demon, or again another Rakshasa he has six heads and six arms, so he will definitely grab at least six of the people and kill them. They take their chance, a logical chance. But then he grabs six of them, finishes them, but the rest sail through. So that's the story, that sometimes we have difficult choices. And always in this story comes that you should always use your wit even in the worst danger. That's constantly there. Don't lose your faculty of buddhi understanding. That's why you will see in the Gita, Shri Krishna tells Arjun that keep your buddhi intact. It's not just about yoga, it's about war. If you become emotional, if you, you know, become nervous, if you are afraid, you cannot. That's why he speaks of buddhi yoga and equanimity. So he keeps himself steady and they pass through it, and then the rest of the adventure follows. So he speaks of that adventure, and further on, yeah. Many the woes in his souls. Okay, many cities of men he beheld, learned the minds of their dwellers. He is growing now. It's a heroic soul. It's journeying through all the challenges of life. It's not running away from life. He is growing through all this. Many the woes in his soul he suffered, driven on the waters. Because he's a chosen one. This is what happens to chosen ones. Fending from fate his life and the homeward course of his comrades. Them, even so he saved, not for all his desire and his striving, who by their own infatuate madness piteously perished. He told them, don't do this. They did it and they perished. Fools in their hearts, for they slew the herds, the deity pastured. Now we will reconnect. The deity sun, deity is the cattle of the dawn. In the Veda, there is a story that the cattle of the dawn are hidden by the Panis and the Vritras in caves of darkness. And Agast Rishi goes and smashes the caves by the word. Agast Rishi drinks the ocean, and Angiras smashes the caves by the power of the word, mantra. And as these Asuras come, Indra strikes them with a thunderbolt and the cattle are rescued. That is the Indian story. The deity pastured Helios. See, Helen. Hellas, the culture which came, and Helios, high climbing, but he from them reft their return and the daylight. Sing to us also of these things. So, because these cattle have to go back, you know, after the evening, they go back to their resting place. So they are, see what a beautiful symbol of the sun rays, and they go back. Sing to us also of these things, goddess, daughter of heaven, muse. Now all the rest who had fled from death and sudden destruction, safe dwelt at home, from the war escaped and the swallowing ocean, he alone far was kept from his fatherland, far from his consort, long by the nymph divine, the sea-born goddess, Calypso, stayed in her hollow caves, for she yearned to keep him her husband. Now we can connect with the story. Those who have seen the movies can connect. The lotus eating, the woman who holds him back. Yet when the year came at last, in the rolling gyre of the seasons, when in the web of their wills the gods spun out his returning, homeward to Ithaca, thereto he found not release from his labor, in his own land, with his loved ones, all the immortals had pity, save Poseidon alone. But he, with implacable anger, moved against godlike Odysseus before his return to his country. So, you know, they are all gods have agreed that, okay, fine, he deserves to come back, grand homecoming. But Poseidon is Rudra, no? He is still angry. He is still angry. So who will take his side in the courts of God? Athena. So Athena pleads on his behalf. And he has also done all the things. See, it summarizes the whole thing. Dwell where the high climbing Helios sets and where he arises. There of bulls and of rams the slaughtered hecatomb tasting. He by the banquet seated rejoiced. But the other immortals sat in the halls of Zeus, Olympian, the throng of them seated. First led the word, the father divine of men and immortals. So here I'll just read just a little. Okay. Out on it. How are the gods ever vainly accused by earth's creatures? See, these people did. What they deserved, they have met their fate. She is describing that. Still they say that from us they have miseries. They, rather always, by their own folly and madness, draw on them woes we have will not. And so she continues, beautiful passage, but then Athene, that's what we'll read. So what does Athene say? Father of ours, thou son of Cronus, highest of the regent, regnant, he indeed and utterly fell by a fitting destruction. So to perish all who dare like deeds among mortals. But he says, all that I understand. They have all, Trojans have gone, many of these have gone, Agamemnon is dead, Menelaus is surviving, and most of them had finished. It was a war which destroyed everybody, just like the Mahabharata war. But for a far better man, my heart burns. See, goddess is pleading his case in the court of Zeus. Clear-eyed Odysseus, who, ill-fated, far from his loved ones, suffers and sorrows, hemmed in the island girt by the waves, in the navel of ocean, where in her dwelling mid woods and caves a goddess inhabits. Who is this goddess? They have not shown in the movie. There is a goddess, who, the water nymph, daughter of Atlas. In our, this thing, it will be Sheshnag's daughter. Daughter of Atlas, whose baleful heart knows all the abysses fathomless, vast of the sea, and the pillars high on his shoulders. In his huge strength, he upbears that part of the earth and the heavens. Atlas' daughter keeps in that island the unhappy Odysseus. Always soft are her words and crafty, and thus she beguiles him. How he is cheated. She is very nice to him. Very soft, very charming. So he is like, you know, caught there. So perhaps he shall cease from thought of his land. But Odysseus yearns to see when the distant smoke of his country unleaping, death he desires. And even in thee, O Olympian, my father, never thy heart turns one moment to pity, nor dost thou remember how by the ships of the Argives he wrought the sacrifice pleasing. So she finally convinces. So he says, okay, done, deal is done. So the game is played, and then we know that he comes back. Meanwhile, what is most beautiful about this story is, we have celebrated Sati and we speak about the Panch Kanyas and the five immortal women whose love is unparalleled. But I am seeing from a very unbiased perspective. If you read the story of Penelope, you will feel everybody else is, she is incomparable. So what does she do? Her husband is gone for the battle, which he believes is the righteous battle. Nobody touched his family, but he goes. So normally battle, okay, either you will hear he has died or they have come back. Something will happen like that. 10 years pass. Now, 10 years she waits. After 10 years, finally, all these warriors come back. So she hears, like, Padaswala, Nevaras. Okay, they have come. Odysseus had taken a different course. He doesn't come back. How long does he wait? She waits for, after 10 years, the war is over, they come back. Maybe another month, let's say 11th year, they have come back. But 12th year, 13th year, 14th year, 15th year, 16th year, 17th year. Not only doesn't come back, no sign. Nobody comes to tell her Odysseus is dead or alive. All that she hears is somewhere the bard speaking about the war which has been won. So logically, if the war is won, he should come back like others have come back. But what happened to Odysseus? Whomever they ask, they say, we don't know, because he sets a different course. He goes on a different course. So nobody knows where is he. None of the sailors survive. Just imagine the state. And this is not enough. See, she had 100 suitors. That's how it's described. Feasting in her house. And they were drinking wine, eating meat and enjoying, because he was, after all, the king of that whole tribe. And so they are waiting for her to, for the news, final settlement that he is dead. So they will marry her. Now why weren't they kidnapping or doing anything? Because that is an age when they were very afraid of the gods. So if they do, maybe Zeus will be angry, Apollo will be angry, we shouldn't do that. So that's why they are waiting, that she must choose. But they have put every pressure on her to choose. Remember how Ravan wants Mata Sita to marry him. But he plays games. Oh, he is dead. Rama is dead. See his head I am bringing to you. So they all keep saying he is dead. We have all heard the news. But Penelope resists. How does she resist? She has devised a trick. She says, you know, for Odysseus' father, I have to make a shawl. So she is weaving a shawl. So daytime, she weaves the shawl. Nighttime, she undoes it. She does it for 3 years. So they are waiting. Okay, when the shawl is ready, maybe she'll make a choice. And so almost now, 19 years have passed. Now they get the trick. Oh, she's doing something. There are always people who are spying. So they say, no, now you better choose. So she says, okay, I'll choose one of you. That's where the movie shows the dilemma. Her son has grown up. And she actually advises the son, go and find out anything about your father. So the son goes, that's an adventure, Telemachus. And then when, by the time, now they are getting impatient, but at the same time they cannot force themselves because of fear of the gods. So then finally, as things conspire, Odysseus and the son meet together. The rest is history. He comes back. There is a little fight. And then there is the bow competition. So he says, okay, he comes as a beggar. He's there in the original story. Nobody recognizes him. Even his son doesn't recognize him initially. He's a legendary hero. See, I mean, Aurobindo speaks about him like this. In fact, in one of the places he says, if you take out of context, because somebody blamed Rama, he says, this is because you are taking out of context. If you take out of context, then Achilles and Odysseus will look like slaughtering animals. But they are great and mighty. But you take out of context. That's how it will be. So, 20 years down the line. 20 years Vanvas. What a Vanvas. In her own house, she is surrounded by 100 suitors. Just think about the situation for a moment. Everybody wanting to marry. What is stopping them? Just that fear of God. Maybe the gods will get angry. And then Odysseus comes as a beggar. She doesn't believe first that he is the... And what has carried their trust together? Just look at it. She has given him a little, like a statue, a small little amulet, which has Athena's inscription over it. And she prays that may she protect you. And he carries that throughout. And it is this, whenever he sees this, even in that nymph's territory for 7 years, she reminds him, there is something else, something I am missing. Something is there which I am missing. This is a story of love. I have probably a family. But anyways, finally, when he shows this to her, then she knows. So, now what to do? If there is an open war, who will win? We don't know, though he is a battle-hardened person. She says, okay, now I am ready to marry, but we'll have the contest. So, contest is there. Now, image Ramayana and the Mahabharata. The bow contest. What is the bow contest? Bend the bow, string it, shoot the arrow through a 20 axis. I mean, basically, axe means axe. But arranged like an X. So, you have to shoot through it. So, arrow has to be absolutely straight down to the target. And these axes are kept like this. So, even little bit of touch and the arrow is gone. So, all the suitors try, they can't even string the bow. So they say, this is all nonsense. You decide on one of us. He'll remind us of the story of Ramayana. You decide, one of us. Nobody can. Then this beggar, Odysseus, gets up and says, let me try. And this, they make a laugh, they laugh at him. And then there is the faithful man, blind man, who he says, why don't you let him try? He knows he has come. So he says, okay, try. We'll make fun. We'll have little fun. Now remember how in both, even Arjun goes concealed as a Brahmin, and everybody laughs. Oh, Brahmin, what will he do? He can shoot an arrow when we have failed. So they say, this beggar will do. So he takes up the bow and he strings it. That itself is surprising to them. And then he makes the twang of the bow, just like his character. It's a virus, no? Heroic. And then he shoots right through. Now when he shoots, all the hundreds, they don't care about any rules, regulations, because they have waited 10 years feasting. They don't care who is he. They don't know actually. They start attacking him. And Odysseus slays all of them. In the original writing, he slays all of them. He's a battle-hardened fellow. He picks up the same bow and the arrow and he slays all of them. And the son, he says, you don't get involved. Let me handle this. And Penelope is so happy. It's like offered them all. Now, here, Homer's story, they have shown a little different in the movie, which is okay. This was better ending if you ask me. In Homer's story, Odysseus continues to rule Ithaca. And Telemachus is made the king. He doesn't go anywhere. But this is another version of the story which is shown in the movie. That version also is a beautiful version. There are many versions. So in that story, as I said, Virgil is also written. Virgil was also a seer, and so was Homer. And Virgil's Aeneid, which is again, I think as far as I know, 50,000 some lines, longest poem. And it took maximum years for him to complete. And Shobindu praises him very highly. And so the ending changes. They say, now Telemachus, their son has grown big. You know, he was 3, now he's 23. You take the kingdom. I must atone because I have killed my guest. Look at the honor. They were guests at my home, whatever it is. And I have killed all of them, so I have to atone. So how to atone? He goes away. This was one of the ways in such a situation that he has to leave the home and go away. And the noblest, one of the noblest women in history, Queen Penelope, she says, I'll accompany you. To where? To nowhere. So they leave, and as the two leave, everyone stays back. Telemachus is crowned king. They say, now the Bronze Age is ending. So they have ushered in a new age. It's a beautiful story. So what happens after the Bronze Age? All the gods withdraw. Now this is not shown anywhere. But if you read, Shobindu describes it in his poem Ilion. We'll just read those few lines and then we'll end. So all the gods are withdrawing. See, when mother says the age of the gods has ended, it started ending with the coming of Kali Yuga, and that's what the Bhagavad Puran starts with. There is a cow which has only 1 foot. She is standing on 1 foot. What does she say? She says dharma is gone, this is gone, that is gone, only faith. Now remember 4 pillars of immortality which the mother speaks of, which one of them is faith. Those pillars gone, everything gone. She says only on faith. And that's why, in fact, there are a lot of descriptions in Bhagavad Puran, we are taking it, where it's like basically at the end of Dwapar, all the gods have sort of withdrawn. And they are there to help about, but they have to allow. Why they have withdrawn, that is also very interesting. The real sense of the withdrawal of the gods is gods have helped mankind till a certain point. What does what do teachers do beyond a point? They say, just simran, jee le apni zindagi. Go, take the challenge of life and live your own life. Because otherwise men will not develop. They will always remain. You'll see in the movie, always there is the fear of the gods, always the fear of the gods. Odysseus is the only one who defies. There is a dialogue also in the movie where they say, but if you try to do this, gods will be unhappy. He says, I defy the gods. To me, my men are more important. So that's why he said, because these are the ones in Kalyug who are needed. So Kalyug is the age when all the gods veil their faces. Now there is no help. Now you make a choice. You may choose perdition, or you may choose to take the pinnacles of glory. And that's why we see that in every part of the world, this is purely, Shubhendra is not spoken of it, so that I'm taking responsibility for my own, the intuition that has come to me. So what happens after that? This story is roughly about 4,500 years old. Let's say 4,000, more or less. I'm not a historian, but from whatever I have studied, let that apart. So what happens after that? After that, Kalyug sets in. So what happens in Kalyug? Now you see, there comes the advent of Buddha. What does Buddha do? He denies the gods. He speaks about the nihil. What does Mahavir do? Again, same thing. What does Christ do? He speaks of the one God. No other. That's how the pagans and the Christianity problem came in. What does Muhammad do for all his, good and bad deeds? He finishes the gods. What happens in India? Vedanta gets fully established. Except that India is a land which understands the subtleties. It kept the gods. It did never discarded them fully. But even in India, the temples, the gods, but Vedanta, the one divine reality. Actually, if you see, it is the same story everywhere. The age of the gods is over. Does it mean they are not existent reality? No. They have done wonderful work. So not like what hardcore people, later on say, I'm not going into a comparative religion. But if you read it, you will understand that the same truth started expressing. No more age of gods, but gods kept operating. Man remembered them from past, when gods walked the earth, when he could meet them, pray to them. Eventually, mankind in India, now Indian context, we developed Vedanta. What does Vedanta say? What doesn't the Kain Upanishad say the same thing, but in a very different way? It says, Yan mansana manute, yan ahur manomatang, tadev brahmantam viddi, nedam yadidam upasate. So ultimately, the age of the one divine which held, based on that people lived their life for how many years, maybe God knows, 4,000 years, but subtly Krishna is guiding them. That's how we have to understand. God, the divine, doesn't leave. Now the avatar keeps guiding till a time comes, which we see today, the end of another civilization, another great war, the two world wars, which are greater and gorier than Mahabharata and the Trojan War, would pale into insignificance. Shurabindo, the avatar, governing these two great wars. And then after that, again the new age, past is clean, dead, millennials. For all the, this is the story, always it happens, the millennials, they don't care about the past. And then what happens? A new age, a new dawn, a new progress. And now the gods, once again, these gods begin to release in man. That's why when you read the four aspects of the Divine Mother, Maheshwari, who is guiding Odysseus. How does Shubhendu describe her? She is not wanting her prayer. She is wanting equanimity, calm, seated above the thinking mind. If you see these four goddesses, Shubhendu describes completely your inner state, inner condition in which they will be with you. See, the whole cycle is complete. And now in the new age, the gods will be in human forms. That's how it is said, the gods are still too few in human forms. And then slowly from the age of the gods to the supramental age. So this is the story which completes. I'll just read few lines. I cannot resist the temptation of reading few lines from Sri Aurobindo's Ilion. Okay, As I said, he keeps Homer, Shakespeare, Valmiki in the first row. And of course, Vyas is apart, cut apart, so he doesn't speak about them. Second row, Dante, Kalidas, Aeschylus, Virgil, Milton. Third row, Goethe. Show with those. Okay. Now, I'll not go much, resist all the temptation to get into it. This from Shorbindo's Ilion. And Paris and Helen are meeting for the last time. Paris is now putting his eye, he's a brave person. Even during Hector's this thing, he wanted to go. But Hector says, no, I'll go and meet Achilles, because he knows it's inevitable death. So Helen is telling to Achilles, it's now Shorbindo's Ilion. They are meeting for the last time. It's like Vidai for the war. Fate was my mother, they say, and Zeus for this hour begot me. And thou a god too, O hero, disguised in this robe of the mortal. So how does he describe a god? What is the nature of a god? Brilliant, careless of death and of sin, as if sure of thy rapture. Gods are above these things. Brilliant, careless. Men may judge. It doesn't matter. Careless of death and of sin, as if sure of thy rapture. What then if fate today were to lay her hands on thee, Paris? Calmly he looked on the face of which Greece was enamored. Actually, Greeks even today don't like to, we call them Greek. Who used to call them Greeks? It was the Romans who used to call them Greeks. Outsiders. Greece literally means aliens. They like to call themselves Hellas. That's their original. The body was enamored. The body for whose desire great Troy was a sacrifice. Tranquil, regarded. Lovely and dire on the lips he loved. That smile of a goddess. Saw the daughter of Zeus in the woman, yet was not shaken. Paris is that. So what does he say? Paris starts speaking. Temptress of Argos, he answered, thou snare for the world to be seized in. See, when you read Shorbindo's Ahana, Dawn Goddess, how does he describe? I have a snare, I have a chain for you guys. She brought all the Greek tribes together. Just imagine by this act. They were all fighting with each other. And what a strategy. Thou then hopest to escape, but the gods could not take thee, O Helen. How then thy will that to mine is a captive? Or how, though with battle, he who has lost thee, unhappy, the Spartan, bright Menelaus? He says, I am not going to let you go just like that, because that's what they say. Send her away, no war. And it's shown in Ilion. All Priam calls all of them. He says, what do you want? He asks everybody. All of them have their viewpoint. At the end, he asks Helen, is there in Shorbindo's Ilion? He says, ask her only one question. He doesn't say, do you want to go? Should we send you? He asks, look at the nobility of those people. He says, do you still love my son? She says, yes. He says, then we'll have war. Just look at the greatness and grandeur. All things yield to a man, and Zeus himself is accomplished. See, now Kali Yuga is to come. So all these great heroes, they say, human will. When like a god he wills, without remorse or longing. Not longing nor remorse. When man wills like a god, everything yields. Thou on this earth art mine, since I claimed thee, beheld, not speaking. He says, I didn't say anything and claim you. But with thy lids that fell, thou veiledest thy heart of compliance. He says, I looked at you and you veiled, you dropped your lids and I knew. What a way. Just imagine. Then in whatever beyond I shall know how to take thee, O Helen. Even as here upon earth I knew, in heaven as in Sparta, I on Elysian fields will enjoy thee as now in the Troad. Elysian fields are We know in Savitri, Shobhita describes the paradise of the life gods, where the warrior souls go, heaven. But of the warrior souls, a very special place. Silent a moment, she lingered like one who is lured by a music. Now we'll just read what she says. Rapturous, heard by himself alone and his lover in heaven. Then in her beauty compelling, she rose up divine among women. We'll close with this. Gaur farmayega. Just listen what Helen says. Yes, it is good, she cried. What the gods do and actions of mortals. See, gods don't look at it like, oh, main ye ho gaya, wo ho gaya. This is not how they are. They live in a grand scheme of things. Grandeur. So she says, yes. Good is this play of the world. It is good. The joy and the torture. Praised be the hour of the gods when I bedded bright Menelaus. She is speaking of her whole life in a summary. See, it was also good that I married Menelaus. Praised, more praised, the keels that severed the seas towards Helen, churning the senseless waves that knew not the bliss of their burden. She says, but that day was even more great. When Paris came and took me on the waves, and the waves did not know what they are carrying. The end of an age. What a wonderful poetry. Just look at it. Praised to the end the hour when I passed through the doors of my husband, laughing with joy in my heart for the arms that bore and enchained me. See, in the Dwapar, and if you go there, life is not like the way we have to constrain it today because of various reasons. Never can death undo what life has done for us, Paris. It's okay. Now war, if death be, so be it. Nor whatsoever betide can the hour be unlived of a rapture. We have had wonderful time. It's okay. Maybe death will come. This too is good, that nations should meet in the shock of the battle. Heroes be slain and a theme be made for the songs of the poets. Now this is a goddess speaking. This is not a human voice. Songs that shall thrill with the name of Helen, the beauty of Paris. Well is this also, that empires should fall for the eyes of a woman. Well, it is not meant for weak hearts. Look at the grandeur. Well, that for Helen, Hector ended. Memnon was slaughtered. Strong Sarpedon fell. And Troilus seized in his boyhood. Troy for Helen burning. Her glory, her empire, her riches. This is the sign of the gods and the type of things that are mortal. Now we understand Lanka Dehan. Entire, you know, gods when they act. Now you say, oh, so many innocent people would have died in Lanka when Hanumanji burnt it down. He should have thought about. Gods are gods. Thou who art kin to the masters of heaven. That's how Paris is. Unconstrained like thy kindred, high on this ancient stage of the Troad with gods for spectators. We read, no, gods have come. Play till the end thy part. O thou wondrous and beautiful actor, fight and slay the Greeks, my countrymen, victor returning, take for reward of the play thy delight of Argive Helen, force from my bosom a hint of the joy, denied to the death claimed, rob in the kiss of my lips a pang from the raptures of heaven, clasping him wholly. Her arms of desire were a girdle of madness. He, with her kisses, flushed like the gods with unearthly wine and rejoiced in his ruin. This is not just poetry. See, it's a dimension he is opening for us. The gods, the great ones, the luminous, what path they have gone. Not frightful, fearful, little, limited, small. Chema.